Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:47 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is September 27th, and we had a little bit of wobbles in the stock market and some questions in the bond markets today, which I think are completely interrelated. Because obviously, one thing that has been the primary goal or the primary feature behind the outperformance of the stock market over the last decade has been the stellar performance of the growth sector, and that's been driven by the Fangman shares. And that, in no small part, has been funded by low interest rates and then the incredible availability of credit. So when we then think about what all that means in terms of how investors have allocated funds, well, they haven't worried about profitability. They haven't worried about whether there is going to be an imminent repayment of their investment. They're thinking more about the future and what those earnings will be in future. And over the course of the last few years, they've been richly rewarded because these companies have been delivering really quite impressive earnings growth. But the question, of course, is that once you get up to a market cap of 1 or even 2 trillion, well, then how much further can you grow? And then how much is that growth dependent on the continuation of the low interest rate environment? So the Nasdaq has rebounded off its intraday low, and it's continuing to hold this area of the 15,000 level, and it continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. And then, of course, we have the additional point that over the course of the last 5 months, we've had numerous occasions where there's been a pullback in the middle of the month, and then subsequently the market has rallied back to a new high over the next few weeks. So the S&P 500 was in negative territory today, but it was off the lows intraday, and it is still holding this sequence of higher major reaction lows. Certainly, though, it has broken the low from that very mild reaction we had in the middle of August, and this is a somewhat larger reaction than we've seen since October of last year. So this was a 5% pullback. We haven't seen anything bigger than a 3% pullback since October of last year. So the march back up to the highs is a somewhat more daunting challenge. And the big question then for investors is what's going to happen in terms of inflationary pressures and central banks' willingness to do anything about it. Because the 5-year Treasury yield is now testing the 1% level, and we've had a meaningful jump in yields right across all maturities over the course of the last couple of weeks. But most particularly, since the Federal Reserve came out and said in plain English that they hope to be able to start tapering assistance as early as next month, to be finished that tapering process by the middle of next year, and subsequently to raise interest rates. So a logical question from investors has been, why haven't we had a bigger reaction? Why haven't we had the same kind of taper tantrum that we had back in 2013? Well, there's two potential outcome, or the two potential answers to that question. The first is that investors had already priced it in, so that they think that the potential for a taper isn't all that big news. So that's already been priced into markets. The alternative is that people just don't believe it, that the potential challenges that are still outstanding are sufficiently large that they're going to deter central banks from tapering and raising interest rates. And presented with the choice of inflation or stagflation, well, the chances are that they're going to choose inflation. So this is, I think, one of the big talking points of the next month or two, because obviously there's going to be a pantomime about increasing the debt limit in the USA, so we could easily get some volatility in the bond markets as a result of that. But the much bigger point is that the moratorium on evictions is ending. The financial assistance coming through as a result of the pandemic has ended in most cases already. The pandemic itself is still a threat, but it is a threat that is receding into the rearview mirror from the perspective of the majority of people. So then the bigger questions are whether we're going to see a fall off in growth as some of the big assistance measures start to recede as well. So the end of the pandemic is probably more of a bad news story for a from a markets perspective than just the ongoing sources of liquidity against an overstated problem, because that's basically been the Goldilocks situation that we've had for most of this year, and it's helped to propel stock markets higher because it kept yields under control. So now that the yield is up to 1%, the big question is whether that Goldilocks scenario is going to continue. And the spanner in the works is that oil prices are trending higher now, and the Brent crude got up to $80, or at least got very close to testing that level. And it's been up in a strong manner for 4 consecutive days, and we're now right at the upper side of this range that's been forming for years now, and it looks really quite well supported. So there is certainly potential for additional upside in the oil price over the next while. And natural gas prices rebounded in a pretty emphatic fashion in here today, so that's also pointing towards higher energy costs overall. And of course, when energy is trending higher, well, then that is putting upward pressure on the cost of everything. And natural gas prices in the UK closed in the region of their peak, not breaking out just yet, but the news headlines, and with lots of pictures of queues at filling stations, and the massive increases we've seen in the cost of wholesale electricity in the UK. Well, there is obviously some people who are blaming Brexit, and there are other people who are blaming the pandemic. But perhaps they should instead all be thinking about the diesel cheating scandal. Because since 2016, the cost of carbon has gone from 5 to 65. And it was the diesel cheating scandal kicked off this decline in diesel vehicle purchasing. And lots of those diesel vehicles are now being decommissioned. Nobody wants to be seen driving one. And the significant reorientation of the European economy towards renewable energy, closing down of coal-fired power stations, trying to supplement base load with the unreliable sources of electricity like wind and solar. So we're now in a situation where the energy security situation of Western Europe is deeply questioned, and this is less a result of either Brexit or the pandemic, and it is purely politically motivated because it's self-imposed. If they really wanted to solve it, solve the energy situation, and ensure security of energy production, then they'd just go back to burning coal. But nobody wants to do that. So we're in this sort of weird environment where people want to ensure that they have security of supply, and yet they're not willing to do what's necessary to achieve it. And this is self-imposed asceticism. And unfortunately, we have plenty of examples throughout history where populations have acted with an ascetic way of thinking, and it's mostly been religiously oriented. And we can think about the Calvinism that grew up in Switzerland, or and many other examples of this type of asceticism, where self-imposed restrictions have contributed to difficulties in the short term, potentially leading to happier outcomes over the long term. But I don't think that people were signing up for this kind of inconvenience when they were supporting the transition to renewable energy. So the big question then is whether this kind of asset price inflation, which is not just about energy prices, but also about carbon prices. So carbon prices add an additional premium on top of rising energy prices. And that's going to have a direct effect on the outlook for the economy in Europe. So then you can also think about what's going on in China, because China is doing much the same thing. It's not exactly for the same rationale. They have the Winter Olympics coming up in February. They, again, politically motivated action. They want to ensure that there is clean air, so that northern China looks pretty in the photos, and they're willing to take the short-term pain in order to cut back on steel production, cut back on aluminium production, close coal-fired power stations, and stop any kind of pollution that might dirty the air. So iron ore prices are starting to rebound, but it's arguable how far they can go, and this so far is an equal-sized rebound in what is still a clear downtrend. So this is obviously a challenge in terms of the inflationary pressures and but also of growth. So it's looking increasingly likely that we're looking at potentially a stagflationary environment, particularly if central banks continue to talk about tapering and raising interest rates, because in normal circumstances, these are kinds of events would be exactly the kind of activities that would spur central banks to at least delay their actions. But they are instead more worried now about the potential outcome that they're stoking inflationary pressures that could get out of hand. So they did say that they were going to wait until they had clear evidence of inflationary pressures before they tighten. Well, by the actions that we've heard from them over the course of the last week, it would suggest that they're there already. Now we can start to think about, well, what does better in an inflationary environment? Well, value generally tends to do well, and the value growth ratio is steadying from the lower side of its range. And I think it's important to just look at the absolute chart, because it might have been underperforming growth, but it is still trending higher. Insurance companies and banks also tend to do well in an inflationary environment. So the insurance sector continues to do well. The financial sector overall also tends to do well in an inflationary environment. And sorry, that's the healthcare sector. XLF, I should have put in. And when we think then about what is doing well, financials certainly are doing well in this kind of environment. Gold has been doing less well, and it has continued to steady around the $1,750 area, but it has work to do. It certainly has to start putting in upward dynamics and to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But it is holding the 1750 area, and the lows were around 1700. Silver is back at the lower side of its range, and it's at least steadying in the lower side of this range. Now it continues to look like a first step above the base, and the most important thing about a first step above the base is that the higher price point is held for a reasonably lengthy period, and that helps to change the psychology that for all the time between 2014 and 2020, people were unwilling to pay more than $20 for silver, and over the last year, they've become accustomed to paying more than $20 for it. And that willingness to continue to pay up and the willingness to buy the dips, that's generally supportive of the bull market hypothesis because it helps to convert people to the fact that the higher levels can be sustained. Of course, we need to see greater evidence of demand returning here. Most particularly, we need to see the price sustaining a move above $25 to confirm that a medium-term low has in fact been found. Copper prices are continuing to hold the $4 area. The big question for industrial resources is, are they going to, or just how much is demand from China going to slow down? China Evergrande was in positive territory today in the stock market, and its bonds are holding around the 28 cents on the dollar area. So there is certainly the potential that there will be additional efforts put in place in China to try and ensure that we're not going to see widespread contagion. But one thing that we can certainly see is that the shadow banking sector in China has stopped and is certainly reducing its lending to the property market generally. So that's removing liquidity from the sector. And the CSI 300 is limping along here and is still ranging below its trend mean and has an awful lot of work to do in order to confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we think about Asia ex-China, well, India continues to attract a lot of interest and the market was in positive territory in here today, and that's also helping to support the MSCI Asia, or excuse me, Emerging Markets ex-China ETF, which is also firming from the region of its trend mean. So when we think about what are the kinds of sectors that would do well in an inflationary environment, commodities generally do better. The financials will do better. Those that can grow their cash flows faster than the rate of inflation should do better. So it would be free cash flow would really start to attract a lot more interest because the duration of investments would start to contract. When you have a discount rate of zero, then the duration on assets goes to infinity. As discount rates increase, well, then those durations start to come in a really quite abrupt manner. The big question, of course, for investors is what do you do? And unfortunately, when one says to overweight one sector, well, it kind of means you have to underweight another sector. So the FANG man sector, which would be Facebook, Apple, Nvidia, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Netflix, well, that's a $10 trillion market cap, and it's losing momentum, but it hasn't in any way broken down. So it's certainly potentially a problem, but not a great deal of evidence just yet. I think it's particularly relevant to pay attention to the consistency of the respective trends, because in an environment where we do have higher interest rates and credit becomes less available, well, then just the extraordinary ability of these companies to continue to inflate their market caps will start to come under pressure. And of course, they represent almost 20% of the total market cap of the NYSE. And that looks like it peaked a year ago. So when we've had a pullback, for example, in Facebook, and the price has steadied over the course of the last 2 days. but it absolutely needs to hold the region of the trend mean. And when we then think about companies like Amazon, where it's already dominant in a large number of retail sectors, well, then it also has to continue to hold in this range. And it is still steady in the region of its trend mean. And then we can think about the sectors or the parts of this group that have done particularly well, like Google. And this trend has certainly accelerated. And it's up nearly 200% off the lows in March of last year. So the consistency of this trend is still intact, but it needs to hold it. We can definitely think then about how sensitive are these sectors to, are these portions of the tech and growth sector to interest rates. And I do think that it's the five-year yield is the one that's most relevant, because if the five-year yield breaks above 1%, then that is going to start reintroducing a significant cost in terms of servicing the US debt. It's going to withdraw liquidity from the market, and then it's the very large companies would be those that are going to sustain some of that selling pressure. So then the big question is, will they be able to continue to sustain their free cash flow growth? And how will that be possible if we get a slowing global economy that doesn't just hit portions of the economy like the pandemic did, but starts to hit people's in their pockets, because we start to see growth slowing down, inflationary pressures rising, and governments that need to start taxing more in order to close their budget deficits so that they can service the debt and then also maintain spending on social programs. So obviously what happens in terms of bond yields is going to have far-reaching effects, and that's why whether the bond yield pops on the upside from here is going to be a pivotal question. And I just think that central banks are just not there yet. I just don't believe that they're going to be so foolhardy as to really start to withdraw liquidity in an accelerated manner and swap growth for stagflation. But we'll see. And certainly the stock market is appears ready to buy the dip, because they just don't believe that bond yields are going to continue to rise from here. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.